This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we had Nick Caserio on the show yesterday, Texans executive vice president and general manager, and hit a number of topics with him. You can find the entire interview up on the Odyssey app, on our show podcast, or on the station's YouTube. Jalen Noel seems to be getting the most run out of any of the draft picks in terms of just universally people saying that's a good pick. In terms of where they got him, 79th overall in the third round. A lot of people like that pick for the Texans. Definitely fills a need for this team with Stephon Diggs gone in free agency and with Tank Dell likely missing most, if not all, of next season. Here was Nick Caserio on what they liked, what they saw in Jalen Noel.
I would say his toughness, his overall instinctiveness, his playing style. He's got good speed, I would say, for his position. I would say in his particular case, he has good speed. You know, he has good time speed, so those two kind of marry up. He's got strong hands, even though he's smaller. He's not like that small. He's a pretty sturdy, I would say, rocky, kind of blocked up kind of dude. Honestly, his build is similar in some respects to Christian Kirk. They're not small players. They might be quote unquote shorter, but they're not necessarily small players. They might play big for their size. How that, I would say, develops and evolves over time, we'll find out. There'll be some nuance involved. There's a coaching element involved. So there's a lot of things that go into being, you know, a good player. And if you have maybe an area that you're deficient, what do you have on the other side of it that you can help offset? And I'd say that applies to really all players. There's no quote unquote perfect player. They all have things that they can work on. They all have things that they can improve. And each player just has to try to maximize whatever they have to the best of their ability.
Yeah, and I think with Noel, he's a small guy, you know, and you look up against guys like Wes Welker. Wes Welker was a really small guy, real small catch radius, all of those things. Tank Dell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think the first thing you always want is, okay, does the guy have speed? And he clearly has speed. The route running becomes a big deal. And yeah, I think he's a good route runner, mostly I think because he's so explosive. He's not refined per se by NFL standards, and that's where one of the X factors is, okay, how does he refine that? And it's way tougher than it sounds, because it seems like running routes should be the simplest thing in the world. A lot of that is just the polish that you have to add as you enter the NFL. The biggest concern that people have had or cited about him, it was interesting, is that his overall drop rate in college was not good. But if you look at his drop rate year by year, it got better every single year. It was 8.1% in 2022. Then it was down to 5.4%. And then this last year, it was 3.4%, which is above average, better than average, like above average in a good way.
Yeah.
Seeing that progression steadily year by year by year, I think is something that Caserio and D'Amico 100% would be all about. They love seeing evidence of a guy actually working at it. Now it gets tougher in the NFL, obviously. He's got small hands, but if you look at the 2024 drop rate, it's nothing that would be a concern whatsoever. You wouldn't think, okay, this guy might not have good hands. So I think he's probably worked at it and he's been effective with it. The one thing people have brought up is he's had 5 muffed punts. So as a returner, that gets to be interesting, because we here in Houston have had experience at times with guys who are really electric athletically, but when you muff a punt or 7, it's all... Next thing you know, the guy's winning MVP of the Super Bowl for the Ravens.
For the Ravens. But, Next thing you know, he's on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. It might not work out for you here.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I haven't looked into when and where the muffed punts were. If I were going to be, without doing any research on the actual individual muffed punts,
yeah,
I'm going to say that it was -5 degrees in Iowa.
I choose to believe they're all weather related.
In late November.
I was thinking the exact same thing. The two wide receivers, Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins, both from Iowa State, they were teammates the last couple of years. Does Jaden Higgins have the better avenue to get on the field early and play more snaps just by virtue of that outside wide receiver opposite Nico Collins seemingly being an opening right now for this team? It would seem like the presence of Christian Kirk on this team would at least be some sort of blockade for if Jalen Knoll impresses in training camp. They might have to find some packages to get him on the field possibly. Is that fair to
say? Yeah. I think that with Higgins, there's some parts of his game that are just his size and his ability to catch contested passes and everything else. And he seems like a bright enough kid. He seems like he's got the right work ethic, all of that other standard stuff. He doesn't have the jackass gene that would keep him off the field. There's sometimes guys who are physically talented and gifted, if they have that jackass gene, they might not get on the field the rookie year.
Right.
He does not seem like that at all. So, yeah, I think they're going to find ways for him to get the ball or at least
fun.
Be a part of the offense.
Yeah. Nick Haley's got to be excited about that for sure. All right, so we mentioned we talked to Nick Caserio yesterday. You know who else talked to Nick Caserio on the phone? Jalen Reed, the 6th-round safety out of Penn State, the day that he was drafted. Here's what the phone call, just to lead into the question we asked Nick about it, in case you haven't heard this yet, this is what it sounded like when the Texans called up Jalen Reed, 6th-round safety out of Penn State, to let him know, hey, you're going to be a Houston Texan.
Hello?
Jalen, Nick Caserio with the Texans. How you doing, bud?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Congratulations. We're going to turn the pick in. We're excited to have
Let's
you.
Do it.
You're a good football
Let's
player.
Do it.
So,
Let's do it.
Yeah, let me. I'm gonna
Let's
put,
do it.
I'm going to put you on.
Let's do it.
I'm going to put you on
Let's
Coach
do
Ryan.
It.
Here's Coach Ryan.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jalen, congrats, man.
Hey, get the Texans hat. Get the Texans hat. Let's do it. Appreciate it, Coach.
You get that Texans hat ready, man. We're fired up to have you.
All right, bet. Let's do it, Coach. Let's do it.
All right, I'm passing you over to our owner here, Kelvin. Yes.
All right, bet. Let's do it. Man, let's go. I'm ready. Let's go.
Give everyone a hug there that helps get you here, okay, bud? And we'll see you soon.
I got you.
Congrats.
I got you, Cal. I got you. Okay.
But my part, if D'Amico had the hardest challenge there because it wasn't clear, if you're listening to the phone call, is Jalen Reed telling D'Amico to get the Texans hat?
Yeah, exactly.
He wouldn't realize, unless it was a video call, that he was actually, Jalen Reed was telling one of his family members there to get the Texans
hat. To grab the hat off the coffee table there. Yeah, I am, we're going to play the Caserio audio about that call in a second, but just re-listening to that while it's on my mind, I'm going to put Jalen Reed at the top of the list of guys to most likely do something over exuberant, either at rookie minicamp or the actual OTAs in minicamp. Pull Alani Johnson, you know, like hitting somebody when you're not supposed to hit somebody.
Ooh. Yeah, if there's a combined practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Against another team.
Oh,
Let's do that. If you're gonna do it while you've got a combined practice against somebody else.
Let's do it. Do we know have we heard anything about any combined practices? I guess maybe we'll find out in conjunction with the schedule coming out next Wednesday. I can't think. I mean, I know D'Amico likes the combined practices.
I always feel like that comes out later in the spring, but maybe not.
Once we see who the opponents are in the preseason, maybe, because obviously it's going to be with a team that they're playing against that weekend.
Who did they have one against last year?
Rams. Remember, CJ was like, I can't believe Matthew Stafford knew who I was. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then they canceled the one. Were they going to have it with the Steelers, but they canceled that one?
The year before, they had it with the Dolphins, and then they canceled the one with the Saints because everybody was so banged up. They canceled the one with the Saints, D'Amico's first year here. So, yeah.
Let's see. According to, in March 27th last year, there were some reports about them agreeing to combined practices. So, since we haven't heard any reports yet, then, maybe it's unlikely that they will.
Yeah, maybe not. Here's Caserio on talking to Jalen Reed on draft day.
Yeah, no, I was trying to just introduce him. Hey, excited to have you here. And I couldn't talk, so kind of let him have his day in the limelight. He was excited. So at least he didn't say, let's effing go, and then we had that recorded. And so, then we would have had a bigger issue.
Yeah, but, social media so. Team's like, ah, yeah.
A lot of energy, very excited, and that's kind of his personality. That's how he plays. So, but that was a fun moment.
Yeah, he's definitely hitting somebody. Jalen Reed, he's definitely hitting somebody.
Yeah, right, in the right kind of way, where you're like, hey, listen, young whippersnapper.
Yeah,
it's much better. What was Ted Johnson's old quote? If they don't bite his puppies, they don't bite his dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd rather have to train somebody out of being aggressive than trying to encourage them to be aggressive.
No question about it. Last one, this segment for Casario, we were bringing up body types. Last year, Will Anderson came into training camp, looked very different. Seth and I gave him the body type change award last year. Some positive time in the weight room last year. The question that I asked Nick was about Blake Fisher. Is Blake Fisher a candidate for that award? And it sounded like he gave us, if we want to bet on that mythical award that Seth and I made up, he gave us the two names to keep an eye on.
Can we give it to D'Amico?
D'Amico.
I said this the other day. He would definitely beat my ass, so I'll try to avoid. But no, he looks good. Blake looks good. He's been here. I'll give you two other players, actually. So Ladarius Henderson has actually sort of reshaped his body. I think nobody's worked harder than LD. I know he lost his whole year last year because he was dealing with foot injuries, but I think he's lost, 15 to 20 pounds of like body fat. He wasn't able to do a lot, but I would say like the level of commitment and focus that he's shown, honest to God, like it's a tremendous accomplishment. And I would say just looking at Kamari, like he looks physically in his upper body a little bigger, a little thicker. It goes back to hard work, discipline, consistent, focused work. And I would say those are some players at this point that have shown that. We have a number of players that have done that. I think phase one in the voluntary program, we had 93, 94, 95% of the team that was here. It's only May. You still have May, June, July, and even when we're not here over the summer, like those 4 to 6 weeks are vitally important. So a lot of players that have made a lot of progress to this point, hopefully they continue to make it over the course of the spring.
Cult hero Ladarius Henderson gets mentioned.
Ladarius Henderson singled out and mentioned as a guy that has improved a lot. I think Ladarius Henderson might have some potential to go down and play guard. And I know that, look, played on a very good team in college. He just wasn't really all that consistent as a player. He was expected to either be a 6th or 7th round pick or undrafted. So the upside there potentially is A, okay, he's reformed his body type. B, whatever his injuries that he entered the NFL with, however much they might have hampered him when he was in college, all of that, maybe there's an unknown consistency there. And then C, just haven't been in the building for a year and learning. So Ladarius Henderson and Trent Brown are the most intriguing X factors to me. In terms of, all right, I just have no idea what to expect. And Trent Brown's a large man in his 30s who's coming off of a torn patellar tendon.
Yeah.
That's dicey right there. But he's been a very productive player in his career. When we talked about this yesterday, immediately people pointed out, hey, weren't you guys gushing about Kenyon Green's body transformation last year?
Yes.
And I think that it was relevant. I thought he looked better in training camp in a lot of ways than he had before. And part of it was because he had revamped himself. Well, that is not the only thing that matters and the only factor, but it's a positive development. Is it better than if I had reported, hey, word is Ladarius Henderson weighs 420 pounds.
Right?
Okay, no. It's better to hear that, wow, he really revamped himself, and it looks like he leaned out, and that's a positive development.
Yeah, I don't think any of us said that when we noticed Kenyon Green's body type change last year, said, he's finally going to live up to being a first-round pick. He got thinner, you know?
Yeah, right.
A step in the right direction.
He looked better, and he was moving better, and okay, let's see what happens. And honestly, in week one, he showed some really promising things. The guys last year that did transform, Will Anderson, just looked stronger. Like, he looked bigger.
He looked bigger.
More muscular.
Yeah.
Henry Toa slimmed down, and he looked faster on the field because of it. Those are the notable ones from last year.
When you mentioned Toa Toa earlier, my wife texted me when we talked about this in the 6 o'clock hour. Toa Toa is working out hard right now. He puts it up on TikTok. My wife likes following Henry Toa Toa on TikTok because she's a big fan of his wife. His wife, I guess, is really funny. So, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I got to get over on TikTok.
Get over
now.
On There's this. This get over on the day. TikTok. And
I can't. TikTok's too good. Well, I know, like, aside from TikTok potentially being bad. But the TikTok, it's there.
When it's good, it's good.
Just, it's addictive.
Yes.
You just, all of a sudden, you look up and you've grown a beard and your kids have graduated college. You're like, oh, I don't, I was just watching baby goats. I don't know what happened.
I thought these were just a few bite-sized morsels. I ate the whole can. Yeah.
Baby goats and fight videos, and yeah, I've missed a decade of my life.
That's it.
What if one off season we come back and D'Amico has gotten fat? What if D'Amico shows up?
I'll tell you, first of all, there would be hot takes galore. And I will tell you, there'd be hot takes galore on this show. I have always marveled myself. I'm not saying every coach needs to look like D'Amico. He's obviously on the very far end of guys. He's yoked up. He's thin. He's in really good shape.
He's got genetic advantages in having been an NFL linebacker. Yeah, but
at the other extreme end, I've always said this: you can't be Mark Mangino walking up to a microphone and talking about how much discipline you instill in your team. You have to at least look like you pay attention to a treadmill or an elliptical a couple of times a week.
I think it depends. You know, Mike McCarthy is a guy that I'm not making fun of him for being overweight, but some guys can carry being overweight where it just looks like, that's a big fat guy. I like that guy. Yeah, he's a big fun fat guy. It feels like with him, it's more like, no, he's not carrying that weight. There's some kind of emotional hole that he's feeding or something.
Because
he doesn't look like... what's that?
McCarthy, you're saying?
McCarthy, yeah. Mike McCarthy doesn't look like he should be. Andy Reid looks like he should be a big fat guy.
Yeah, I guess.
Right? And he wears it well. Yeah. Sure, he should weigh less than everything. I worry about McCarthy.
But
I
Andy
feel like
Reid,
there's something eating at him.
I'm with you. Like Andy, I look at Andy Reid and I don't view Andy Reid as I do Mark Mangino, mostly because Andy Reid used to be like 350 pounds and he's actually trimmed down a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like Andy Reid probably does get out and walk like a mile and a half a day.
Right,
you know?
No, but I'm saying, but I don't care if he does or not. In terms of me judging the guy or like worrying about, there's some guys that fit there. There's some guys that just look like, oh yeah, they're a big guy and they're carrying more weight than they should, but it kind of fits him. Other guys, it looks like it's like they're wearing a fat suit almost.
Yeah.
And that's where you like, it's almost like it's I don't know. For whatever reason, I worry about those guys.
My glitch may be very Mangino specific, in which there used to be all these articles when he took Kansas from being horrible to being like 11-0 one year, and they talked about the discipline that he instilled in the team. I'm like, that guy, his name cannot wind up in the same article that has the word discipline in it ever. Ever. He needs to show the same discipline at Golden Corral that he is trying to instill in his team before you can do this. That is not a guy who embodies discipline. That is a guy who embodies cholesterol. Right there.
I mean, guys, NFL coaches have gotten very fit recently over the last decade or so.
Oh, they fit and they dress fancy too.
Are there any really sloppy guys? Like, and you know where I am with Andy Reid. He's a naturally big guy.
Yeah.
Are there any like really sloppy guys you can think of right now?
Let me go through. I want to go through this during the break. I bet I can find three that I would qualify as sloppy during the break.
Okay.
I bet I can find three. And I'll let you be the judge.
Work.
I'll let you be the judge. Yeah. So we'll do that important exercise. Also, Tom Brady on the Impulsive podcast, Logan Paul's podcast, named the four defenders he hated getting hit by the most. A Texan cracked the list. We'll have that for you as well. We'll do that coming up next. Okay. I did the important work during the break.
This was like we were getting the sales presentation ready to pitch to Coca-Cola last minute. We're like, we gotta get this.
The funniest part about this conversation is you and I did not crack a smile the entire time. We were treating this like we were doing research for NASA or something.
Yeah.
So I started going through the exercise. I promised the audience I would. Seth challenged me that we wouldn't be able to find sloppy head coaches in the NFL, or that they're at a very bare minimum right now.
Yeah, there's just not nearly as many unhealthy-looking head coaches as there used to be.
And I said, I'll find three. I'll find three, and this is where Mike McCarthy not being in the league anymore and Brian Daboll getting into shape and all these things really hurt the cause.
The Jets not hiring Rex Ryan.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Instead, they go for the exact opposite in body type in Aaron Glenn.
Andy Reid is, and we just conceded that Andy Reid is, yes, he's overweight, he's a little heavy, but he's dropped a lot of weight, and I would concede with Andy Reid. He does look like one of those old people that gets out and walks a mile or a mile and a half a day just to kind of make sure that the ticker is still working. I put this thing into five buckets, these NFL head coaches. The buckets are yoked, skinny, fit, dad bod, and fat.
Okay.
Andy Reid is the only one who I think qualifies as being fat. Like, he's still fat. Yeah.
Yeah, like, if Sean Payton were a younger man, he might fall into the fat category, but you got to move the bar a little bit because now he's a grandpa age dude. Yeah.
He's a dad bod. Yeah. So I'm looking at this.
He's in dad bod. Sean Payton's in dad bod.
So I've got, by my count, I've got 3 yokes, 6 skinnies, 12 fits, 10 dad bods and Andy Reid in fat. That's it. Does that add up? 9 plus? Yeah, that's 32.
Who are the dad bods?
These are the dad bods. Vrabel.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you what. Yeah, that's true. Vrabel has slipped into the dad
He's
bod.
He's a dad bod now.
He was very fit initially, but you can tell the years have taken a toll on him.
Dad bod. Zach Taylor. I'm assuming dad bod just because he's not any of these other ones. He's not fat. I mean, he's in Cincinnati. He's always got heavy clothes on. You never know.
No, he is. He's got a little bit of a doughiness to him, but no, it looks like he should be flipping burgers on a Sunday, yeah.
Liam Cohen, dad bod for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Liam
Cohen's got, like, annoying girlfriend's younger brother body.
Yeah. Brian Callahan, just because I don't really know, so if I didn't know, I just put him in dad bod.
I would want to say fit, but no worries.
But Jim Harbaugh, dad bod for sure.
Jim
Harbaugh.
Yeah. Granddad bod.
And I had John Harbaugh in fit. John Harbaugh looks like he carries it a little bit better.
Especially for his age.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, older. That's where, for his age, definitely fit. Yeah.
Sean Payton, dad bod, for sure. Sean Payton, Denver Broncos head coach, Seth. Yeah, just looking
for Brian Callahan is dad bod. You're right.
Is he? Okay,
one.
Yeah. Sean Payton, dad bod. Brian Schottenheimer, just because when I didn't know, I just put him in dad bod because I assume they're in their 50s.
He's dad bodish. Yep. Yeah.
Brian Daboll, good for him for getting out of the fat bucket and into the dad bod bucket.
Yeah, I'll put him there.
You think he belongs in the same bucket with Raheem Morris, Dave Canales?
If it were 1985, he'd be fat. But our standards have changed so much that I would say dad bod for Daboll.
Dad bod. He's dropped a lot of weight. The last two are Tampa Bay is – who's Tampa Bay's head coach? Oh, that's Todd Bowles. No. Yeah. Sorry. I put Cohen on two teams. No, Todd Bowles. Sorry. We only have 9 dad bods. Bowles is fit, I think. Right, Todd Bowles?
Yeah, unless he's let himself go in the last couple
think he
years.
Has. He's fit. So we got 13 fits and 9 dad bods. Oh, and then Kellen Moore, 100% dad. I can look at his face and tell you there's a dad bod below that neck.
Right? I think Todd Bowles may have slipped into dad bod,
dad
by
bod?
The way.
All right.
Yeah.
Get back in there.
It's hard because he, like with him and Dan Quinn, they offset it with a good amount of muscle. So it's like, all right, they're thicker around their midsection than they used to be, but they offset it with their shoulders. So by the age, if we allow for age, because Todd Bowles is all of a sudden up there in age, I might have to – he's okay in the fit if that's where you put him.
No, I moved him back into dad bod. Well, with
dad
Bowles,
bod, okay.
With Bowles, the salty demeanor, too, is almost the tiebreaker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all right, I guess you're fit because you might beat the crap out of me if I say you're not. The three that I have is yoked. Only 3. So most of these guys are just hovering around, hey, I'm a naturally skinny guy. I get on the treadmill every once in a while. I'm settled into my dad bod. And then plus Andy Reid, who's fat. The 3 yoked guys, the 3 guys that I would take, like, okay, you got to pick the most yoked guys to get into a street fight with you. Sean McDermott, Buffalo. I think he's yoked.
He is. He's got that wrestler's body, too.
He's got the delta, those curvy deltoids and everything.
Yeah.
I think he's yoked.
He's not as lean as he used to be, but he's got enough muscle that it really offsets it.
Yeah.
The age, as you get older, the muscle, any muscle mass at all really offsets any midsection fat.
He feels like one of those guys, Seth, that if he didn't have a six-pack, he would actually be able to do one of those 2-week challenges and get a six-pack if he wanted it. McDermott. Mm-hmm. D'Amico Ryans, yoked. And Dan Campbell, yoked.
Yes.
All three. Those are my three. Everybody else is in either the skinny or the fit category.
Todd Bowles is a tough one. Okay, now Brian Daboll, though, this one's bothering. What would you have classified Bruce Arians as if he were still in the race?
Oh, that's a good question. I would have said dad bod for Bruce Arians.
I would have put him in the overweight bucket.
In the fat? Okay, yeah, I just don't remember.
I feel like Daboll belongs. I feel like we're giving Daboll too much credit for losing weight because he is still in the... It's like, you know, it's like any of us that have a higher BMI, but we're big. Like, I'm not...
Hey, man. If you want to help me out and get more, because the challenge was for me to find more guys to put in the fat bucket.
Yeah, we don't have guys that were just, we don't have as many guys in the NFL anymore that just look flat out like a stroke
sloppy,
waiting to happen.
We got to go back and find the team picture of the owner's meeting from like 15 years ago or something like that and see what it looks like. Okay, I'm glad. Good. I'm glad we did that work. Hey, let's get this Tom Brady audio in here. He was on the Impulsive podcast, that's Logan Paul's podcast. Some good stuff came out of there. Some of it we might be able to hit tomorrow, too. This one I like. There's a Texans tie to it. This is Tom Brady, the four defensive players he hated getting hit by.
Is there anyone that you were, like, afraid to get hit by?
A lot of guys. Ndamukong Suh, maybe. Ray Lewis was at the top. Ndamukong Suh, I didn't like getting hit by him. J.J. Watt wasn't very fun to get hit by.
I figured you'd say J.J. Watt.
Yeah, Haloti Ngata. You remember him? He was about 340 pounds, played for the Ravens. He was massive. So, that's not fun.
Okay, J.J. made the cut.
Yeah,
how about
there
that?
You go.
Take that.
Yeah, and JJ, I mean, what JJ did, did almost destroy Alex Smith's career. That wasn't even a hard hit.
Him and Kareem Jackson, finishing maneuver. Well, and that's the thing, too, is, you hear those guys, Tom Brady played against those guys. Ray Lewis, they played the Ravens a lot. The Patriots did. They played the Texans a lot when JJ and Tom Brady were on the team.
No, okay, so read the list of names again. It was Haloti Ngata, it was J.J. Watt. Who are the other ones?
Ray Lewis and Ndamukong Suh.
So I think with three of those guys, they're larger defensive linemen. So the sack are – none of those three pass rushers are your classic edge rusher. J.J. did transition into being an edge rusher, but he was huge.
Yeah.
And it's just the – so other than Ray Lewis, it's the body weight coming down on you.
Yep.
That I think there's plenty of – he got sacked more often by some other guys, but, like, Haloti Ngata fought landing on you, and Ndamukong Suh hitting you and landing on you, or J.J. Watt, who was – 295 or so, it varied anywhere between 285 and 295. That's a lot of mass coming down on you.
Yes.
I think most quarterbacks would rather get, as long as they're not getting hit in the head, I bet most of them would rather get hit really hard, but then just go, if they go flying off and roll on the turf,
right,
versus Haloti Ngata bear hugging you and landing on you.
Yeah, dude, that's just gotta be terrible. Okay, what were you chuckling about as I was beginning playing that cut?
I had looked at the 2005 list of head coaches back in the golden era of Dennis Green, Romeo Crennel, Bill Parcells.
Boy, that
you see, we used to stand for something as head coaches in the NFL.
That's just
we would have our cake and eat it too. Damn it,
literally. Yeah, it would be eating cake while telling you about eating cake. Yes,
and actually though, I think though, and Andy Reid was still there too.
That was super fat Andy Reid.
Yeah, there's no discussion about that. Those guys were sloppy and overweight.
And so that's just four you picked off the top of the heap. You didn't even have time to go through all 32 teams and see who the coaches were. Back.
Right. Yeah. And those guys were overweight in any era.
Like, yeah.
Right, now, I go to the playground and I'd say like six or seven kids out there would have been the fat kid.
It's weird, growing up.
Yeah. Actually, no, I would say 50% of them would have been that's the fat kid growing up.
We've grown
as a nation, Sean.
I guess.
That's one thing that comes from bountiful resources.
Yes.
We just have calories have never been cheaper.
That's right. It's true.
God bless us all.
Except eggs. No, I don't want to get into that argument again. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. That was an important segment that we just did there, putting the NFL head coaches into fat buckets. All right. Okay. We're going to play some audio we played earlier. This is from Area 45. We're going to do this in the next segment. We've got audio from Area 45 last night. Is Patrick Creighton, in his massive frustration over hot takes about Jose Altuve, talking about Payne and Pendergast.
The
beloved, popular Payne and Pendergast show. We will do that coming up. A lot of people weighing in, no pun intended, weighing in on the topic of the physical fitness of the 32 NFL coaches. We'll read the text here in just a second. We'll talk to the guys on In the Loop and find out what they've got going on today on their show. Area 45, if you're not listening to Sports Radio 610 at nights, you need to. Our night show is excellent. I really enjoy Patrick Creighton and Sean Bajani when I'm out and about, for sure. I love that we get audio from their show every morning. We come into it, we listen to it, and we get to see what was popping at nighttime. We got to listen to this one, and this one is, Seth, the cut we're about to play here was one of those ones where like, huh, okay, well, Patrick Creighton mentions other radio hosts in this cut here, and not in a flattering way either, not in a positive way, not like, there's these radio hosts I've been listening to, and these guys are amazing, they're excellent. Like, no, these radio hosts have an opinion that I think is, where's the word? Asinine. I just wrote it down when I listened to it earlier, asinine. Here was Patrick Creighton, Area 45, last night, talking about the opinions that are out there on Jose Altuve and that this slump may be the indicator that he is headed towards washed.
There's a reason why I sometimes hate listening to sports radio. When you hear guys that you know and you like start talking about the idea of, hey, is Jose Altuve getting old? Is he slowing down? Is he no longer, like, are we watching him age before our eyes because he's in a slump for the last 2 weeks?
That's been the birthday conversation for Jose Altuve for like 4 years now.
It's an asinine conversation.
Mm. Okay. So we had to make the determination when we played this earlier. Could this be us? And I guess the only, independent of how we feel, we've been talking about Altuve, through the prism of Patrick Creighton, these are hosts that he knows. Mm-hmm. It's us. He knows both. And that he likes. Mm. Okay, and of course, at least in the eyes of Ben Gary, our producer, he likes both. I think Patrick it likes both. Like, I like, yeah. Patrick. I know that. Yeah.
It's starting to feel like the only escape for us is if he actually hates one of us. But we haven't really harped on any of that with Altuve, other than in the offseason talking about the move to left field and all of the reasons for it are that, yeah, like, I mean, I don't think they're talking about us, and we haven't really been. I'm not worried about this current slump with Altuve. I don't think this is as much evidence of his age as it is just a slump that Altuve and many others have been through before in their lives. So, yeah. But I mean, to address what Sean was saying, or what Patrick was saying as well, is he getting old? Yes. Like, he said, that's the way life works. He's getting older. Is he slowing down? Demonstrably, yes, he has slowed down. He's not as fast as he used to be.
Yeah.
But in terms of offense, I'm not worried. I mean, he started off hitting very well at the beginning of the season. He's been in a slump for a while now. But the, like, last year's performance was still, even though it was a drop from the previous couple years, last year's performance by Altuve was still very much in line with a lot of seasons that he's had from 2014 until now.
Yeah.
It was, you know, his OPS plus was about the same as it was in about half of his seasons. Mm. It's just that 2022 and 2023, Altuve was really, really
hot.
He had
a spike, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So, I don't think that Patrick is talking about us, but I do think that, I don't think you can just, you know, dismiss the concerns about his age. He's not going to play until he's 45. And we will probably see a steady decline. It's just a matter of how much of a decline over the next few years.
Well, eventually it's not going to be an asinine take. Altuve's not going to retire. At least I feel pretty strongly. Altuve is, if he calls it quits at the end of this contract at age 39, then I don't think he's going to have an OPS of, you know, 840 at age 39. Or even, he will settle into where he is probably an average baseball player, you know?
Well, the biggest thing, too, is it's kind of like the difference between the weather and the climate. Like, the weather is what's happening right now.
That's a great analogy, yes.
What's happening over time. And a lot of times, depending on whether it's a heat wave or a cold snap, people are going to say, yep, this is it. This is evidence. Like, what will happen over time is that slumps like this will be more frequent. You know, yeah. You don't go through hitting one third of your plate appearances or at bats every single game. You just over time, yeah, he's going to have more slumps. And is this some of that what we're going to start? Is this current slump something that we're going to see more often over the next few years?
It's a great point. I love that weather and climate analogy because you're right. Like base running with Altuve, climate. Defense with Altuve, climate.
Yeah.
This particular juncture with hitting, like hitting in general with Altuve, I feel like it's weather. I feel like it's just a storm right now.
It's a cold snap.
That's a great analogy. And yet there are things, there are measurable things that show he is declining. He is a slower baseball player now. I know he beat out a single yesterday, finally snapped that hitless streak that he'd had he finally got a hit. And it was him beating out a grounder to first base or a ground ball to the infield.
Well, the other thing to remember about it, though, too, is if you look at Biggio as an example, because Biggio played till he was 41.
Yeah.
It's also important to remember that if Altuve, let's say theoretically he has a down year this year.
Yeah.
Biggio still fluctuated from age 35 to 41 a pretty good amount. You know, like he was in the 700s with the OPS, and then his fourth to last season, he had an 806 OPS. Mm. His OPS plus, he was down. He was 111 in 2001.
Okay.
Then he went down to 88 and 96 in 2002 and 2003. And then he was right back up to 105 and 104. Biggio extended it out pretty admirably for a long time. At no point there in the last 5 or 6 years was he close to when he was at his peak.
Yeah.
But he did like stay at a pretty consistent clip in his later years.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that'll be the big question too is, you know, the later year Biggio teams, like the ones you pointed out where he was back over 100 OPS plus, I don't think those teams were relying on him nearly as much as this team is relying on Jose Altuve. You know, that was a team, 04, they made it to Game 7 of the NLCS, and in 2005 they made it to the World Series. Not as good an offensive team in 2005, but you did have, you know, Lance Berkman was on those teams. Jeff Kent was on the 04 team. Traded for Carlos Beltran on one of those teams. You had other guys who were having good years. Bagwell was kind of winding down at that point. That'll be the big thing, Seth, here is, okay, how reliant on an aging Altuve are the Astros going to continue to be? You know, they are relying on him to be one of their two or three best hitters in their batting order right now, for sure. For sure they are.
Yeah.
They're paying him like that. So
yeah, yeah. And I don't know. So the current slump, like in the immediate, you know, short term weather forecast or whatever, I'm not overly worried about it. Over time, over the next few years, he's not going to be the same player. Almost definitely won't be the same player he was when he was at his very peak, you know, up through 2023.
Yep.
But yeah, he's the least of my concerns right this moment.
Yep.
He's one of the least of my concerns right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's going to be fine. I agree with Patrick on that front. Text message. Altuve and Yordan are having to get used to life without a whole lot of other dominant hitters in the lineup. Other guys are being pitched to, then Altuve and Alvarez are being pitched around. So they're not seeing the same pitches that they've seen in previous years. I think
the protection of having Kyle Tucker, and Kyle Tucker until last year was very, very healthy. It's hard to find all the splits of a guy playing without Kyle Tucker,
yeah.
You know? So the presence of Kyle Tucker in the lineup, yeah, it had a trickle down effect on a lot of guys.
I mean, how painful
is Bregman. And Bregman, well, his at bats.
And that's what I was just going to say. That's painful. Like, what's the more painful one to look at right now when you see things? There was a graphic that popped up yesterday on the internet, on Twitter, that had the top three MVP candidates for each league. And Kyle Tucker is like number two in the NL. Aaron Judge is running away with it in the AL right now. But Bregman's top three in the AL. The Bregman one is super painful to me just because we're at a juncture on the calendar where Bregman has not been hitting when he was an Astro for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
you know, he, again, notoriously slow starter, as we know. So that's the painful one for me. Like, oh yeah, Alex Bregman, to coin a Chandler Rome term, woke up this morning with an OPS of over 1,000. You know, like when's the last time Bregman had an OPS of over 1,000 at any point during a season, let alone early in the season?
Well, and you know, the one thing that Bregman does well too is just he gives you competitive at bats when he's not playing.
Correct.
Really well individually, and that helps the lineup out. The Astros were dead last in pitches per plate appearance last year.
Yeah.
In terms of they saw the fewest.
Yeah.
They just were not as good. They've made improvements, but they're still One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. They've seen they're eighth worst in that regard this year. So
they're improved. Oh, wow. Okay.
They've improved, but they're still eighth worst.
They were pretty good out the chute this year, like the first week. Small sample size, I get it. But hey, Ben, can you cue up the Creighton audio that we played? Okay, you got to cue it up. Okay, good. Because people are texting in again about that. They're letting us off the hook for this, Seth. Yeah.
They're blaming Lopez, aren't they?
They did. They definitely did earlier. They brought up John Lopez by name. Who's now in studio here. John Lopez.
Noted Altuve hater.
Reggie Atitula, who I don't know. I didn't get to hear John hating on Lopez yesterday. I don't know if Reggie, if you were feeding the beast, if you were trying to talk him off the ledge. Like, I don't know. How were you handling John Lopez? Well, I guess I should ask you first, John. Is this true that you were talking? Well, let me play the audio. Let me back all the way up. All right, then I'll talk to John. Then I'll get Reggie's thoughts on this. This is the audio that we played earlier. Wondering if me and Seth were the radio hosts, air quotes.
I like the way you're doing this.
That Patrick Creighton was talking about.
There's a reason why I sometimes hate listening to sports radio. When you hear guys that you know and you like start talking about the idea of, hey, is Jose Altuve getting old? Is he slowing down? Is he no longer, like, are we watching him age before our eyes because he's in a slump for the last 2 weeks?
It's been the birthday conversation for Jose Altuve for like 4 years now.
It's an asinine conversation.
Asinine. Okay. So Crosstalk sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing, by the way. So John, was that a fair characterization of how you discussed Jose Altuve at any point during the show, say yesterday, maybe?
It was me.
It was you.
It was me.
Oh, okay.
I'll even let Reggie participated somewhat. And he didn't go in as hard as I did.
Okay, that's what I want to find out too, yeah. Reggie. Like, could you have been lumped in? Are you?
Oh yeah, I mean, I was.
You're asinine as well.
Okay. I was in the conversation.
Okay. I just wanted to see if you were just like egging John on, or if you were Jose Altuve.
He participated.
Pool with
I wanted to at least get, because it was my idea to talk about.
Okay, I got you. John's claiming this like a badge of courage.
And you know why I'm claiming it?
Why?
It's true.
Whoa! Asinine. It says asinine.
I'm not the asinine part. Everybody knows it's not asinine because it's true.
Okay, where are you on this, Reggie?
He's older. He's 35, and that has nothing to do with his production.
Yeah,
but and here's the other thing: where this is one thing they were wrong about.
Okay,
like I kept qualifying his numbers, like his, you know, where he's is right now, and saying it is Jose Altuve. Correct me if I'm wrong, Reggie.
That is correct.
Jose Altuve. He does, you know, he can snap out of this.
Yeah.
He's going to be doing things. He's going to get his hits. He's clutch. He's the greatest Astro in history. But the one thing that's undeniable is, and you referenced it in this segment earlier, his speed is on a steep decline.
Yeah.
And that is the biggest sign of all. He ranks 218th right now in sprint speed.
Wow.
Yeah, he's 1.5 miles per hour slower than he was.
A mile and a half slower.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So that's
an entire breed of dog. He's gone from greyhound to I don't know, like some kind of he's not Shih Tzu.
Lopez
wiener dog.
Lopez has him as a bloodhound. Over here.
I was gonna say the word asinine was harsh, but then you did that. And I was like, okay, I see where he got it. Actually, you know what? I want to go on the offensive, gentlemen. I think it's asinine to pretend like he's just going to be the same Jose Altuve into eternity. Oh,
shots fired. I like this. Okay.
Because I do understand where PC is coming from. We have seen Jose Altuve have, you know, some rough stretches, but absolutely come back with a strength that is admirable. But I think it is fair to wonder at what point does that wear off? And maybe the bigger point that we probably needed to make more clear is, what does that mean? Because it doesn't, just because aging is happening does not mean that you are useless. I mean, I'm talking to quite a few men who have a little bit of years under their belts. And I think that you guys have very much worn that very, very nicely. But like, what does that mean for the team around him? What does that mean for the ways that he has to? Because I mean, he utilized his speed quite a bit to help him in some of those circumstances. And that is something that is slowing down. And you guys were talking about it just a second ago. What does it also mean with the team around him and with how much responsibility is placed on him to be a focal point in this team? I think all those things are worth considering.
They coming into the season, I feel strongly that they were counting and are counting on him to be one of their two best offensive players.
Yes.
Him and Yordan Alvarez. Mm-hmm. No question about that. And that's a tough putt at age 35. No question. What's the question of the day? Speaking of questions.
Oh, okay. Question of the day. We have two of them that we could run out here. So I'm interested to hear which one you guys are more excited with.
Okay,
just taking a run with it. We can either go with what is the most embarrassing thing that you've done that you've ever done in public.
Okay,
right? Based on Mitchell Robinson last night, airball.
Oh,
free throw.
And not just an airball.
That was
like,
the
he
worst.
Looked like he looked like my aunt playing Papa Shot. Yeah, like he's not good form either. And what's the other one?
Or what draws you to your favorite athlete?
Oh, okay. I'm going to go with the embarrassing thing because that's an easier one to come up with. That other one that's a good question, requires some thought. Mine is the one that pops into my head immediately. Walking to a Notre Dame basketball game, I forget what year it was, but I was in school there, and it's cold outside. We're walking from the dorm to the Joyce Center to go see the game, and you got to know like how cold it gets there with the wind blowing. So you got your head down a lot of times.
You weren't looking at a phone then.
I was not. No. Yeah. I wasn't. I was talking to my roommate who I was walking to the game with, and I walked, and you walk fast when it's cold outside. Yeah. You want to get out of the cold. So I didn't have my head up. I walked smack in front of hundreds of people, smack dab, face first, right into a lamppost and bounced off of it, landed, hit my back of my head on the ground, and I was out for like 15 seconds.
Oh, you were out?
I was like seeing stars, woozy. Yeah, probably not unconscious. But yeah, so right, embarrassing. Tackling at me right now.
Laughing at you?
Oh, I don't know. I was like, yes, I'm sure. I would have laughed at me.
You're in that mode where you're so embarrassed you're just going to get up and go. Yeah. Like you got up and like fast walked out of there.
Yeah, probably.
The key thing here, Seth, is in public where everybody sees you.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing better than when you do something like that and then you look up around to see if anybody saw it and nobody did. That's the best. That's right up there with finally getting to poop when you really need to poop.
I have an answer for Seth's. I wasn't there for it or anything, and I want to see if Seth's answer to that question is the same as the one that I think it is.
It definitely isn't. Mine would have been something. I had a similar experience to yours where I was I was riding my bike home from school, and it was the last day of school, so I had all my stuff from my locker packed on my backpack, and it was like jammed. You know, I couldn't zip it, so it was wide open to the world. It's on my back. It probably weighs like 48 pounds, and I decided to cut down through this hill. And I didn't realize like how wet the hill was because it had rained the night before. So as the buses are leaving from our school, they all leave out this one road right in front of this hill. And I just bit it hard on the hill, covered in mud, and all of my backpack split wide open. It was a windy day, and I was like, I was peak embarrassing age too, like sixth grade, you know, just gawky and ugly and all that. And kids are laughing at me. Teenagers are honking their horns as they drive by. It was awful.
Okay.
And I just left everything. I just booked it out of there. I don't know. There's probably love notes from girls in there and everything. I was just,
This was
a lot of love notes.
This was going to be my prediction. This is going to for the gawky sixth grader. Yeah. Guys just swimming in love notes.
That's
so
right.
Many love notes,
The one I thought you were going to say was the one where you had that appearance at a Jacksonville mall with some of your teammates and you were in uniform.
Yeah.
And you lost the crowd. Like your teammates went one way and you went the other in the mall.
I was just wandering around,
in his uniform in the mall. That was my prediction. That's my favorite Seth Payne story of all time.
I'm walking around the food court wearing my full uniform. But it was a uniform but without shoulder pads, which is always a bad look for linemen because they're cut so tight in the shoulders, you know. So people were looking at me kind of like, wow, he's either crazy or really proud of himself.
I love that story so much. It makes me mad that like it wasn't replicated like on the show Playmakers back in the day. Like that is so good.
They didn't realize I was a leash kid.
That's a great line.
Coughlin's got Seth on a leash.
They had to assign Ronaldo Wynn to me to keep track of me than at my buddy system.
That's
my favorite athlete that I admire most, and for what reason? One of my favorite athletes, George Springer, because he had such that perfect balance of caring deeply about it, but also just having fun at the same time. Mm. And it's such a hard balance to strike, and it just seems like that's naturally who he was.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I don't have one for that question. I hate everybody. How's that?
Yeah.
All right.
Fair enough.
Who's your favorite fat football coach?
Okay, now I can do power rankings. Here we go. Yeah. Not Charlie Weiss, I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, well, that's obvious.
Charlie Weiss is second. Everybody else is tied for first. How's that? Yeah.
Mark Mangini.
Yeah, well, we talked about him earlier. Yeah, yeah.
I love it because he was good to hate. Yeah. He was good for me to hate.
He instilled discipline in his team. Oh, and KU too, he was right? 800 pounds.
Yeah. That's KU. Exactly why.
Yeah.
That's exactly why.
All right. We are done. We're out of time. Seth, antibodies to you. Friday tomorrow, baby. Let's go. Let's go.
Antibodies and happy Friday. Yeah.
All right. We are now done and out of time. Maybe forever. You're listening.
Things you never want to hear.
KILT AM. Seth, change it. That's your most embarrassing moment in front of the public right there. An Odyssey Sports Station.